Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
We're really excited to have our guest today. It is Ole Miss offensive coordinator, Phil Longo. Phil Longo has some impressive statistics behind him and what he's done at Sam Houston State. Head coach Hugh Freeze tabbed Phil Longo, the engineer of the nation's best FCS offense at Sam Houston State, as the Rebels offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach on December 16th, 2016. Longo helped Sam Houston to the FCS playoffs in each of his three seasons while shattering the record books. The 2016 team went 12-1 and boasted the nation's number one total offense at 547.3 yards per game, the number two scoring offense at 49.5 points per game, the number two passing offense at 368.3 yards per game, and the number 37 rushing offense at 179 yards per game out of 122 FCS teams. The Bearcats scored touchdowns on 80.3% of their red zone chances, also the best in the nation. Sam Houston had more than 4,500 passing yards and 2,000 rushing yards in 2016. No FBS team accomplished that. We're certainly excited to be talking with Coach here today on the Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Coach Longo, we're excited to have you here on the Coach and Coordinator Podcast.
How you doing? It's good to be here. I appreciate your time.
Well, Coach, I had some questions from our listeners here, and we certainly want to get into your offense. But the question I'd like to start with all our guests is, what made you want to become a football coach?
Yeah, you know, I think we had a situation back when I was a junior in college when I got hurt my knee, had surgery, and I was out as a medical redshirt to give me an opportunity to spend a year with John Bunting, who was our head coach at the time, who was a major influence on me. And he went on to be the head coach of North Carolina and was the DC at the Rams when they won the Super Bowl with Dick Vermeil. And he just was a huge influence on me. And so I got to spend a lot of time in the office with him when they were coaching. And I kind of just got the bug then, because I was around the coaching end of things. And I just kind of knew after that, even though I went back and played my senior year, I knew that coaching was what I wanted to pursue.
Coach, as you, if you've grown and developed as a coach in the different places you've been, what do you look back on and say, these were some key lessons for me and my, you know, impacted me in my development as a coach?
Well, I think early on, you know, John Bunting was an influence on me because he put time into developing a relationship with me and with my teammates. And we always respected that. I mean, some people classify those kind of coaches as player coaches. I don't know if I would title it that, but I definitely feel that there's a lot of validity to establishing personal relationships with the players that you know, you're coaching. And of course you can't have the same one with every player. You know, you have different contact time with each, but you know, I think it's important that they all know that they can have one with you if in fact that's what develops. Now later on, you know, other things that impacted me were maybe more schematic. I mean, my exposure and having the opportunity to meet Mike Leach and be exposed to their raid philosophy. I think it's more than just the X's and O's. I think it's the philosophy that has helped shape what I do as a football coach. So those are probably the two of the most, you know, impactful things that I've experienced throughout, you know, my years coaching. There's been many. Those are probably the two key elements for me.
When you look at having an offense as explosive as yours, and certainly a lot of it you attribute to having some great players, but there's that culture you have to build both with your offensive assistants and the players are going to go out and execute it. Talk to us a little bit about the culture you build within your offensive unit.
I think that we have really started to recognize over the years, you know, as you grow as a coach, I think regardless of what offense or defense you run, you know, you learn as a coach as you get older and become more experienced that the mental approach and the focus and the mentality and the culture that you have is as, if not more important than the X's and O's on the field. And I think I'm a firm believer that X's and O's can make a difference. I'm a firm believer that play calling is a lot more important than a lot of people in this business give it its due credit. But I don't think that any of that stuff trumps or becomes more important than having the team focused, having the team understand that we've got to play selflessly and we have to play for one another, and you've got to have a culture of being able to move from one play to the next without it affecting us emotionally. You know, we're huge fans of playing enthusiastically. We don't like playing emotional. And so all of that develops your overall culture. And if you have that, if you have that in your locker room and on the field with your unit, then I don't think the X's and O's make as much a difference. But I think they can be a factor after you have the culture that you want.
And obviously that starts with building those relationships, like you mentioned. I don't know that, you hear the term players coach. I mean, I think being that way, developing relationships, is just being a coach. And I think if you're not getting labeled that way, at least by a good majority of players, there's an issue. So what are some of the things you focus on in building those relationships with your players?
Well, without question, and it's actually one of the reasons I'm excited about being at Ole Miss, but without question. And I say that because the philosophy is the same and the approach is the same, but there's no doubt, number one on my list is I truly believe that if the players know that you care about them, if the players know that you're going to have a relationship with them after they graduate, if the players know that they can call you in 10 years and ask for help or advice or just want to stop in and see you, or they want to introduce their family, that they're going to be welcome to do that. I think for them to know that it's more than just about their athletic ability on the field and what they can do for the school and the program and, the team and the staff, then, I think they become more invested in what you're doing. And I think they trust you more. And I think they're willing to give you a little bit more of that blind faith that you really expect of them and they need to give you when you first get somewhere. I asked our players here at Ole Miss, I said, listen, I need one season of blind faith. You don't know me. I don't know you. And I'm going to trust you until you give me a reason not to. And I need you to trust me and this staff when we talk about what our approach is going to be going into the season. And, and they've done that, and that's why we had such a great spring ball. But I think that is a key factor in developing the overall culture that you want with the team.
When you have a high-powered offense like that, you have to focus some of that and attribute some of that to, obviously, the coaching, the teaching of it. And you're obviously in a teaching phase right now in spring ball at Ole Miss. What would you say are some of the best things that you and your coaches are doing to build that understanding in your players that they can play with confidence and they can play fast?
There is a huge emphasis and a belief here that getting every player that's going to contribute on Saturday, getting those players to a point where they can play instinctively without thinking, that is at a premium here. And if I don't feel, and we don't feel, that a player is playing instinctively, we're probably not going to put him in the rotation on Saturday. I think as soon as you have a player that has to think about what they're doing, can't just line up and go do it in their sleep because they've done it over and over and over. It's not instinctive muscle memory and instinctive routine. I think that player becomes limited with what he can do. You can take a great athlete, and if you brain freeze him, he's not going to be nearly the athlete or the asset on the field that he could be. If you take a great athlete and you teach him less, and you give him the freedom to play more instinctively, one, he can reach that instinctive level quicker because the things you're teaching him are less or are simpler. And then you can get that great athlete that you recruited in the first place.
And a lot of that I know is subjective, but is there anything objective for you in trying to have a measuring stick for, is this player instinctively ready to get out on the field for us?
Well, it is subjective to a point, but it's definitely you can evaluate it, you can assess it, and we do it once a week. You know, we go through it, we talk about every single player, we go pull up the practice film and the game film, and we evaluate how they respond to some difficult situations, to some adverse situations. We talk about, you know, what kind of mental mistakes they have. We talk about how long it takes them to get lined up and go do what they got to do instinctively. And we grade them. And if we grade a player out as a one, we think, and it'll break down not just by player, but we'll take every scheme or play in the offense individually as a position coach. For instance, I'll take our starting quarterback and I'll take plays 1 through 26 and we'll go down the list. Where are we in play one? Well, we'll evaluate all of the cutups of play one. You know what? You're running this thing instinctively. And I'm gonna hand that play to the kid. I'm going to tell him that's in your playlist. That's in your bank right now. You own that play. And we're going to go right down all 26. And when I can get to a point where he knows 23, 24, 25 of them, or all of them instinctively, you know, I've got a player that should be playing instinctively without thinking on the field. That's a player that I would grade out as a one. A player that we grade out as a two, we'd hope not to put a two on the field. Sometimes you have to because they're younger and they're developing. A two is a solid player, doesn't make a lot of mental mistakes, is fairly focused, is playing pretty fast, but just isn't quite where a one might be. It's just, it's not quite can do it in your sleep level yet, and that's a two for us. A three is a player who is still learning, is definitely not ready to play, cannot just get the play line up and go get it and do it properly and execute it with good technique, you know, and know the assignment on a regular basis. And a four should really only be a newcomer. A four is just completely clueless. And so that's how they all come in. And it's our job to get them from four to ones. And so we do, there's a premium on playing instinctively. We grade it by concept and we grade it by player. And really your key to open the door to get on the field is to get yourself to a level one.
Coach, what's the philosophy that begins, you know, the teaching of your offense? What are you guys really trying to accomplish?
Well, when we first, you know, with regards to maybe this situation here at Ole Miss, we first got here, you have a new team, new players don't know anything, they've never run the offense before. We will spend the necessary time on film and on the board and in the classroom, putting it in and teaching it. But once we get the spring ball, we're going to take 4 days and install the entire offense in 4 days. And so days one through four, we got it all in. And, you know, five through eight, we kind of reinstall or reemphasize those same 4 days of install. And we add some wrinkles and we run it out of different formations and we might present it differently, but we're running the same stuff that we already know. And then, you know, practice 9 through 12, we work on all of our situational stuff. And 13 and 14 are polished days, and 15 is the spring game, and that's the day we try to go out and execute, put our best practice together.
So I know a lot of today's young offensive coordinators have so much information at their fingertips, probably a lot more, I know, than I did growing up as a coach. And there's a tendency maybe to start grab bagging and thinking, this is a great idea, I'm going to take that and put it off at my offense, et cetera. Talk to us about the importance of having a system, especially one that you can install, like you said, in 4 days. Obviously, you have to find that balance between being simple but having the answers you need. How important is it to have a system to be able to be effective like you guys are?
I think it's very important, and I think, you know, I often use the example, my playbook at home is taller than I am, and, you know, I love every great play in football, but, you know, I learned early on, just from my own experiences, that trying to run everything and be good at everything is, you know, it's like swimming upstream, and you just never really get to a level where you can't be instinctive running 145 plays, you just can't do it. And all 145 might be the 145 best plays in all of college football. But we can't be good at all. And all of them don't mesh together. You know, they don't fit in and jive with each other. It's just a hodgepodge of different plays that work. And a lot of times those plays work because they are packaged with other plays. So when you just try to pull something from a Sunday pro game or pull something from a film of a college clinic and you like it, you know, we're not going to put anything in the offense unless it fits the package, the system that we're running. It complements it. And, you know, we kind of limit our offense. We cut it off at 26. And that's just kind of over the years, that's the area that we feel is kind of the saturation point. So if a coach on our staff brings a concept that's better than something we're running, then we'll replace it. You know, we'll eliminate something and we'll put in the better play. That way the weak link is always getting stronger. But we're not going to add it. Every time you add something, you water down how effective we can be at the rest of it. And so I very, very quickly early on in my career got out of the business of trying to prove to my players how smart I am. And I'd rather just teach them things that they can do instinctively and let them go do it and you know, not try to. It's very hard to win the chess match and outcoach the other side on every play. And I think we gain a great advantage by letting our kids chase space, create separation, and win athletically.
And looking at your 26 plays, how do you begin to attack situational football? What's the emphasis as you go into building your third down package, you know, attacking in the red zone as vertical space disappears on you? How do you fit those plays, or how do you start to tailor those 26 to attacking those situations?
Well, the plays don't change, so we don't have a different playlist for red zone. We don't have a different playlist for short yardage goal line than what's in the base offense. However, you're able to take, you know, without going into specifics, but you're able to take, you know, one play, maybe a drop back pass play that you run anywhere in the open field, and you get down inside the 10-yard line, and we'll still run that play if we feel like it's a good one, but we'll teach our players now, say, hey, look, we already know the foundation. We already know this play. Here's how we adapt it. Here's the adaptation or the adjustment when we don't have the vertical space. And on the goal line, you know, here's how we're going to adjust this run play, because we're going to get a loaded box. We're going to get different shades. We're going to get different fronts, different looks. This is how we adjust or adapt that particular run play in this situation. So the learning is what adjustments or changes need to be made are just those. They're simple and small and easy adjustments or adaptations. They're not completely new schemes or concepts.
How do you fit specials into what you do? You know, obviously your trick plays or something you might pull out, you know, a couple times a season.
Well, I think we have a library of exotics, as we call them, trick plays or special plays, however you want to title it. But we have a playlist of exotics that we carry and that we install and we run on a regular basis. So we really just treat them as regular plays. We don't treat them as anything special. And so what happens is they become pretty routine to the offensive personnel. And, you know, we'll run a reverse just as quickly as we'll run four verticals. And so we may not pull the trigger on that play as often in a game. The nature of that play is just that it is an exotic play or a special play. And you're going to use it, you know, at the most optimum situation in a game. But we're going to run them in practice and prepare for them so that they're successful, just like we do any of the others. And we'll go into summer camp with a library of plays that we can pull from our bag of exotics when it fits that week's opponent. Very rarely are we going to draw up a trick play and try to, you know, create one and then go teach it the week of the game based on what the opponent's doing. I'm not saying we never do that, but that is not the norm.
Which obviously, RPOs are all the rage right now. How do you fit those into your package, into your 26?
Well, with some guys, I think there's a big misconception that we are a huge RPO team. I think RPOs are good. I think they have their place. They've been effective for us. But we really only carry a few. You know, we'll run three or four of them. We may not even run a ball each game, but there are three or four in the offense, and we'll use them. But, you know, there are certain things that a defense can employ that completely take those away, and we're not going to call them or run them just to say that we run them. If they don't look good on Saturday, we probably won't even practice them that week. We're going to practice what we're going to call on Saturday. And the only thing that – the only plays that stay on the playlist for Saturday are the ones that we feel are going to help us that game. So if 13 out of the 26 plays don't look good against Saturday's opponent, we're going to practice the other 13 extensively and put them in a way and run them in a way that we feel like we can win with them on Saturday.
I've had discussions with a lot of coaches about, you know, what's the optimal amount of reps you give a certain play to prepare it for game day in practice. What's your thoughts on that? How often does a play need to be repped when you think about, you know, specifically in group, like inside run, 7-on-7, team periods?
I stopped trying to place numerical, you know, value to a number of reps we need to run inside zone or run, you know, mesh or something. It's doing and running this system for 20 years. The advantage there is, you know, we know that it takes a little longer to get good at mesh than it might for verticals. And so, you know, you plan for that. And we know that over years of experience that with five different teams, mesh has taken longer than four verticals. Mesh is taking longer than throwing hitches. And so, you know, you plan for it in your install. But as far as knowing, hey, we need 300 reps at mesh before we get good at it, every group of players is completely different. And the emphasis with regards to where we direct our play calls, one, is dictated by our talent. And then two, it's dictated by what the players actually take to. What do they just naturally run well and what don't they naturally run well? I mean, we have an athletic group of guys here that they're outstanding. And we have a play that has been difficult to run in the past that they can do in their sleep right now. And we have a play that I've run just about everywhere I've been. And, you know, we're not exceptional at it right now. And it's just because every group of guys is different. And so it's important, again, if you have those personal relationships and you know how to address kids, you know, as professionals, as human beings, as people, and you know, you can derive the most from them because they respect you as a coach, and they're going to want to work hard for you. You can get the best out of them. You know, you address those things and approach it in an aggressive way, and we'll grade our plays out just like we do our players. Are we running this in rhythm instinctively without thinking about it? Yes. Well, then it goes on the playlist that we can pull from for Saturday's game. If we run something all camp or all spring ball and we just can't get it right, it won't even be on the library going into the season.
Technology is really becoming a big part of this game, and especially, you know, the NCAA has looked at a rule change in using technology in-game. They've pulled that back, and they're waiting on it a little bit. But what currently is your favorite pieces of technology that you use to coach your players?
You know, I'm a big fan of teaching players on video. We don't have a playbook. We don't write a single thing on a sheet of paper. You know, there are no files here. We're going to teach everything on film. So I'm a huge advocate of teaching it on film. And then this is probably the second most popular way here with us is to walk through it or duck through it. I don't think there's anything closer to doing it the real thing than visually seeing exactly how someone was doing it successfully. And, you know, even better than that, there's nothing that helps you learn something more than actually doing it. And so those are the two top ways. Now, I'm not opposed to any of the technology. You know, you have the virtual reality stuff that quarterbacks and other players can use, and, you know, we're into all that stuff. And I'm willing to use all those as accessories, as additional ways to help improve our players. But at the end of the day, what their muscles do, what their memories do, creates habit and instinctivity, and that's really what we're trying to get with our guys.
Talk to me a little bit about the walkthrough. I've seen a number of these, and I've seen them done correctly. I've seen them done where, you know, they're not very effective. What would you say are some of the keys to running an effective walkthrough practice?
The two things that we do is when we walk through a play, we don't necessarily always line up. It's one thing to line them up and install the play where they're standing there and we're going to talk it and then we're going to go jog through it. You know, that's what we do when we install something. But other than that, if we're going to have a walkthrough, typically the positional coaches will do that individually. Once we get together as a team, very rarely are we walking or jogging through anything. Once we get together as a full unit, you're expected in that atmosphere, you know, in that setting, to line up quickly and run the play. And so when we do, you know, if we're going to put inside zone in, we might walk through it with the running backs and the quarterbacks. The offensive line coach is going to be separate. He's going to be going through all of the different fronts and scenarios for inside zone with his guys. And the receivers are working their block responsibility separately. And then we'll all come together. And if we run inside zone together, it's going to be full tilt. So that's how we do it. I mean, it's right, but that's what works for us. And so that's how we do it. So once we get into a true team setting, we're usually very up tempo.
Let's extend this to game day. What are the responsibilities of your coaches and what kind of information are you looking for from your assistants in order for you to be able to operate and do the things you do as the offensive coordinator?
Well, they all have input. And I think you can't effectively do what you need to do. Myself as a play caller and our position coaches handling their guys unless we all communicate together. And that's one of the reasons that we wear headphones every day in practice. So when we're in Scaly or team, any Scaly or team setting, we have headphones on and we are communicating. And it just becomes second nature. You know, certain coaches know when they need to be quiet and not talk because communication needs to go on between two others. You know, I know when I need to be quiet when we're discussing something and, you know, we need to let our RV and our O-line coach go at, you know, and discuss something that they're making an adjustment to. And it just becomes a natural rhythm after a while. And so that's why we do it every day in practice, and it really helps our game day communication.
And thinking about practice and looking at the different things you need to do as both groups and units, what would you say are some of the keys for you in utilizing something like your 7-on-7 to get the most out of it?
Well, 7-on-7 is, you know, it's a drill that's done without the O-line. And so I think sometimes it can cultivate a sense of security for the quarterback that they don't really have. And so team pass is a great drill. But when we do go to Scaly so we can focus on certain things in the drop back game and quick game, we're going to have guys out there with hands up, and they're going to run through stunts that we give them and movements so the quarterback still has a feel of a moving pocket. We're also going to stopwatch them. So if the time that we feel it should take to get through maybe a three-step look progression in a pass get play, if that time is up and we haven't delivered the ball, we're gonna end the play and call it a sack and or turn it into a scramble drill. But we're not going to sit back there for 5 seconds and throw something we know we'll never have 5 seconds for in a game. So getting them to understand that it has to be run in a prescribed time because that's reality, and putting a little bit more of a realistic situation in front of the quarterbacks with regards to pressure and different eye lines to receivers, getting them off their launch point so that they have to move their feet correctly and still trigger the ball accurately. Those are all key parts, and that's kind of how we operate Scaly.
I think those are two great suggestions. I know our coaches will be able to use. I always loved using the stopwatch, and I like that, exactly like you said, giving them something to simulate that pocket instead of just throwing through wide open lanes. I think those are outstanding coaching points to add to the 7-on-7. Coach, you got one more question for you that I ask all of our listeners. And what's the one thing you would point to as giving your teams the winning edge?
One thing to get the winning edge is, you know, and I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I'm telling you, I just feel, like I said, we put a high premium on playing instinctively. And that means the guys have to understand the importance of mental preparation before they get on the field. And if they do that, we're going to get a lot closer to seeing their true natural athletic potential on the field. And really our entire program is based on allowing them to have maybe more freedom than some other approaches with regards to running routes and doing some things because we want them to play instinctively. We want them to be able to rely on their athleticism. So when the bullets are firing and there are some difficult adverse times in the game, which we all know we're going to see every week, we know we can hang our hat on things that we do day in and day out and can do them instinctively. And I think that promotes confidence in the minds of our players and our staff. And as you well know, anytime you're doing something that feels comfortable, that you're really, really confident in, you have a much better shot at being successful than if you handicap and restrain yourself because you have to think too much.
How can our listeners connect with you?
Connect with me? I mean, anybody that texts me or emails me here at Ole Miss, I am, unless I'm in the middle of the season, obviously, I really appreciate all the time that coaches throughout my life have given me. And so I'm very appreciative of all that, and I know that it benefited me. And so I really try to, it may not be the very next day, but I try to answer every contact that I get. So I would say if you shoot an email out or send me a text if you need something from an X and O standpoint, I will at some point definitely get back to you.
I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing some great ideas here with our listeners. And good luck to you and the Rebels in the 2017 season.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Wow, Coach Longo really shared some great stuff with us, and here's three key takeaways I have from him. Number one, I really loved what he said about play enthusiastically, not emotionally. You think about how many times when players are playing emotional, that one twist or turn of the game, you know, gets them down, gets them off their game. So teach them to play enthusiastically. Number two, I really liked what he said about having 26 plays and sticking with it. They have a system. They find a better play. They'll replace the weak link. And that's their menu. They pick from that menu each week. They might take, for example, 13 plays into the game, but they really are disciplined about sticking to having a menu of 26 plays, and it fits into a four-day install. And the last thing which Coach emphasized throughout was that you need to get your players to play instinctively. And I really liked the scale he had for grading his players and knowing if they were ready to go and making sure that they had what he termed a number one out on the field.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.